What is going on, everybody? Jamie Shaw here on the Absolute Basketball Experience. And today's guest, we're very excited to have Pittsburgh head coach Jeff Capel on the show. We talked to him about his time growing up as a five-star recruit and his decision to go to Duke. We talked about his time as a coach at each stop, going from assistant to a 27-year-old head coach at VCU to Oklahoma, his learning experiences, and then taking over the program at Pittsburgh and what they have now, what they have looking forward, and where things are going in the culture that he's building there. Before we get into it, I ask that you please go ahead and subscribe to this channel. If you would, please go ahead and like this video, give it the thumbs up. And if you enjoyed what we talk about in the content in this video, please feel free to share it across your platforms as well. And in the comments below, I want to hear your favorite Jeff Capel moment. There's been a lot of them. Everything from coaching to recruiting to the shot that he hit against UNC to, you know, the three NCAA tournaments he went to as a player, et cetera, et cetera. Tons of good stuff to get from there. Want to hear in the comments your favorite Jeff Capel moment. But without further ado, here is Pittsburgh head coach Jeff Capel on the Absolute Basketball Experience with Jamie Shaw. Thank you guys very much. What is going on, everybody? Jamie Shaw here on the Absolute Basketball Experience. I'm joined today by Pitt Panther head coach Jeff Capel. Jeff, how you doing today?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm just trying to figure this quarantine thing out, trying to figure out my day and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, no, I think everyone is. It's not something that's normal.
Absolutely not. They say a new normal. So
yeah.
Coming up, you played for an AAU program, an AAU team that is still talked about today in North Carolina. What are your memories from that team in that time?
Well, you know, it was certainly a different time in AAU back then. You didn't have as many tournaments, as many things. So the big thing was always the Nationals. And it was interesting. I would always play. My high school, we basically had a team that we put in like the regionals in North Carolina, the state tournament, I should say. And, you know, we knew we probably weren't going to qualify, but it was to get us more experience. But then for the Nationals, I would go, and that team was the Charlotte Sonics. And initially, it was Jeff McGinnis and myself. We had other really good players. Thad Bonaparte, who was, when we were younger, was an absolute beast, and Latrum, and my, I mean, so it was a lot of guys. And then when it probably really went over the top is when Stack joined us. Jerry Stackhouse joined us, I think maybe right before our senior year. And it was fun. It was a lot of highlights and a lot of battles. You know, in the state, you had the Sonics and the Royals. And that was kind of a big rivalry. And so that's kind of when AAU was really getting started, and the boom was, you know, sort of after that.
No doubt. And then, you know, you were a 2,000-point scorer in high school, a state champion out of Fayetteville area. Were you always going to Duke, or did Coach K kind of have to fight for you a little bit?
You know, I grew up a Carolina fan. I think everyone, you know, in the state, certainly when I was younger, you know, I was 7 years old when Jordan hit the shot. I mean, I remember it. My family, we were watching it in the basement. You know, we were living actually in Southern Pines at the time, the Pinehurst area. And then the next year in 83, the Lorenzo Charles putback off of the Wittenberg air ball. But I was a big Carolina fan when I was younger. And I would tell my parents every day when I was growing up, when I get older, I want to go to North Carolina. I want to play for Coach Smith. It was really, I want to play for Coach Smith. And I had Carolina posters. If you look back at a lot of old pictures, I normally had Carolina paraphernalia on shirt or hat or something like that. When I got, you know, to around the 10th grade, I think North Carolina was one of the first schools in the ACC to offer me. I went up there a lot for unofficial visits and things like that. And then right around February of my 10th grade year, Duke offered. And it was at the end of that season when I went up and did an unofficial visit the first time at Duke. It was probably around April, and I think that was of 91, shortly after they won their first national championship. And I remember when we were driving home, we probably spent a couple of hours up there. When we were driving home, my dad said to me, you know, hey, you're quiet. Like, what's wrong? And I said, you know, that's the guy I think I want to play for. And it was just a connection I felt with Coach. And in the next year, at the beginning of my junior year, I narrowed my list to four, Duke, Carolina, NC State, and Virginia. But it was always Duke and Carolina. And I went up to a game at Cameron when I was a junior for the first time. Duke kind of ramped it up with me, recruiting me. And I knew at the end of my junior year, that's what I wanted to do. So I committed at the end of my junior year.
Sure. And at Duke, I mean, you started parts of and most of all 4 years. Two-time captain, you played in three NCAA tournaments, won finals, you won 80 games. What do you feel like your legacy you left at Duke as a player was?
Well, hopefully what it was is that, you know, we had to relearn how to fight. I think when people look at the Duke program under Coach K, because there was success before Coach got there. But when he got it, you know, it dropped a little bit. And when you look at that program, a lot of people look at it now, you know, maybe when I got there and certainly when I went back there as an assistant coach, it's a program with kind of like the silver spoon in your mouth. Mm-hmm. And certainly when Coach took over, it wasn't that way. You think about it, it's a private school, you know, 8 miles away from the public school, the state school, mm-hmm. you know, with the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. You have NC State, you know, 20 something miles away. And so you have to compete against that. You know, in 80, they hired this guy in Coach K that no one knew him, didn't know how to pronounce his name. He's coming from West Point. So it wasn't some sexy hire. And you're having to do that right down the road from Coach Smith, which is already one of the storied programs. And then an upstart at NC State and Coach Valvano, who was this media darling. And so the program in the 80s had to learn how to fight. And then they had success. And then when I got there, that was right after winning back-to-back championships, the first time that happened since you know, John Wooden's UCLA teams. Mm-hmm. And then my freshman year, we played for the national championship. But then the next year, we're 2-14 in the ACC. We're 13-18 overall. The next year, we start out 0-4 in the ACC. Mm-hmm. And we finish up 8-8, 18-13, but we lose in the first round. And so the thing I was most proud of, and hopefully the legacy I left, is that we had to relearn how to fight. You know, just like Dawkins and Billis and those guys, we had to do that. And so my most proud accomplishment at Duke, besides graduating from there, is the fact that my senior year, we won the ACC. Mm-hmm. And we kind of got it going back on that trajectory of going up. And I'll never forget my senior year, we started to have some success. And I can't remember who we beat, but we had a really big win. And Coach came in and he was like, what you guys are doing, like it's I'm so proud, so happy, and other people are noticing it. And I got a call last night from Shane Battier because of what you guys doing, saying he wants to come. And then this morning I got a call from Elton Brand saying he wants to come. And that was exciting. I mean, as much as I would have loved to have had one more year to play with those guys, the fact that we had a small part to play into getting it back, you know, to where it should be, that's the thing I'm most proud of.
So you grew up a high-level player. After you left Duke, you played a couple years as a pro. You know, and even with your dad being a highly successful coach and everything, what was that transition like for you hanging it up and getting into coaching?
You know, it was difficult because, you know, like a lot of these young people now, these young guys in high school, you know, I thought that, you know, my dream was to play in the NBA and to, you know, have a career. And then my ultimate dream job was to get in the front office after playing. Playing was the dream. But, you know, you try to figure these things out. Okay, you know you're not going to play forever. My dream job was to be an NBA general manager. Mm-hmm. And so you have this thing figured out. And, you know, I would always hear, my dad was a high school coach and a college coach. You know, I'd see him do clinics and talk about education. And my mom was a teacher. So I knew the importance and the value of it. But I also thought, like, okay, I'm not going to be one of these guys that get hurt. Like, that's not going to happen to me. And so you feel like you're close to the NBA. You can touch it. You're right there. And I kept getting these injuries. You know, I'm getting ready for the Chicago pre-draft camp. I'm in a gym working out, and I rupture a disc in my back. So you go from a guy that thinks that maybe you can get drafted to I'm not drafted. You know, I'm out, it's getting ready to play summer league with the, you know, Golden State Warriors, you know, going into my second year out of school, and my back injury flares up again where I have to have surgery. I had an illness. So I had an injury and illness that ended my career at 24. And so I'm trying to figure out the transition. Now, I never thought that I would coach. That's not something that I ever wanted to do. But the year that I was out that I didn't play, I missed a year. I played my first year out. I played in the CBA. My second year, I didn't play because of this illness, you know, that I had. I developed the inflammatory bowel disease called ulcerative colitis. And it was bad there for a while. You had to find the medicines. That year, I think, is where I got the coaching bug. My dad was the head coach at Old Dominion University that year. And so because I couldn't play, I spent a lot of time with him and his team watching. And I think that's where the bug to, you know, coach started. And so I was fortunate. I was able to get into the profession with my dad. Mm-hmm. He was still the head coach. My first year, I was an assistant at Old Dominion. And then my dad lost his job. So I'm the guy at the Final Four passing out resumes and trying to make connections. And I was very fortunate to get hired by Coach Mac McCarthy at VCU. And I became an assistant there and I learned. And for some reason, the athletic director and the president there at VCU thought that I would be the guy that should take over. And so at 27 years old, I became the head coach at VCU.
Yeah, that's a cool story. I mean, you know, you spent 2 years as an assistant, one, as you said, with your dad at Old Dominion, and then to VCU as a year. But then you got at 27, you got the head coaching job at VCU, which wasn't the brand that it is now. That brand that it is today kind of started with you. What was it like for you moving over a chair and taking over and, frankly, revitalizing a program like VCU like that?
You know, it was something that was incredibly fun. There was an innocence about it. There was an innocence still about the profession because I hadn't been in it that long. I'd only been in it for 2 years. I had never been on the road recruiting. When I was an assistant, I was kind of in that third spot, and so I'd never gone on the road to recruit. And so when I remember when Dr. Sander, who was the athletic director at VCU, when he came to me about this, and, you know, like, we think you should be the guy, you know, what do you think? And I would never forget, I said to him, well, look, I know I don't have experience. I understand that. But I think a big part of coaching is two things. I think, do your guys believe in you? Mm-hmm. Can you get guys to believe in you? And can you get them to want to fight for you? And I think I can do that. The other stuff, and so it was a lot of learning on the job. I was lucky. Mm-hmm. I was really lucky in that I was left some good players, especially on the perimeter. And then we went out and we added good players. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had unbelievable support at VCU. I think they wanted to get it back. They were really, really good in the 80s and had taken a little bit of a dip in the 90s. And then we were fortunate because when I got the job, we had a young man there by the name of Dominique Jones. Mm-hmm. And it's a kid that I inherited. He was a junior, my first year as head coach. And he was a really, really, he was a great player. But even more important, he was a great kid. And he was probably one of the most low maintenance, really good players I've ever had to deal with.
Sure.
And so he kind of helped that. He kind of helped move that thing faster. And by the time we got to year two, he was such a dynamic player and influence. And then we had continued to add talent. You know, we had my first year coaching, we recruited, went out and recruited and got the guy who ended up being the rookie of the year in Nick George. I thought we had the best big guy that we recruited in Troy Godwin. And so by that second year, Dominique was a senior. Those two guys were in their second year. And then we added guys, but they ran everything. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I learned, to have really good players who are also really good guys that have the respect of that locker room. And so during my time there, look, we won a lot, but the thing I'm most proud of is that we changed the culture.
Yeah.
And I give those guys, the Dominiques, the Troy Godwins, the Nick Georges, the Mike Doles, the Jesse Pelarosas, and the B.A. Walkers, all of those guys, man, they did it. And then Anthony came in and he kept building on it and took it to another level. They got a tournament win, and then Shaka came in and knocked that thing out the park.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt.
And so I marvel at what they've been able to do. I'm so happy for them. I'm happy for the fan base, the university, because they've really invested a lot into it, and they've been able to get a great return on their investment.
No doubt. It seems that AD, starting with you, heading on, I mean, just hired superstars. It's like, all right, so this is the next big guy. We're going to go ahead and hire him. And you know, he really good job, really good eye for talent, that AD.
Yeah, and the subsequent ADs, because, you know, after me, you know, there was a different AD, and he did a good job with his hires and, you know, and things like that. And I think the thing that people understand, coaches, is that that's a place, it's a special place. Mm-hmm. And it really and truly is. And I, you know, probably found that out after I left. Like, really understand. I mean, I knew it when I was there, but yeah, you understand it more when you leave and you see different places. And one of the things that I hate is, you know, look, I understand fan bases and I understand different things, and people have a lot of pride. I hate that, you know, people talk about, well, you know, us that left VCU, you didn't have success. Like, I went to Oklahoma and I did have success, but then we ran into some stuff and I ended up getting fired. Anthony went to Alabama. Anthony had success, but he ended up losing his job. Shaka goes to Texas. You know, he's had success, but there were questions. And so it's not that. Like, all of us value our time. Mm-hmm. At VCU, we learned a lot and things like that, and we were able to move on to do something better for our families. Mm-hmm. And it's not a shot at VCU. We all love VCU. Yeah. And so, you know, again, it's a great place, and they've done a really good job of investing into the program.
And you bring up Oklahoma. You got that job at 31, Power 5 coach at so young. I mean, you established yourself there as a big-time recruiter. In 5 years, you amassed 96 wins, 2 NCAA tournaments. You produced a number 1 overall pick. What did you learn during your time at Oklahoma?
I think the thing that I learned the most is how everyone has to be all in, and mm-hmm. everyone has to be on the same page. The communication, you know, about what you're trying to do. And then, I think I learned even more there is how important it is to have everyone in that foxhole with you. And you have to understand, up to that point, for me in my career, I had faced adversity, but I had never had a losing season. Mm-hmm. My first losing season as a head coach came in my 8th year as a head coach. And so, like, when you lose like that, I'm talking about overall losing record. Mm-hmm. You know, my first year at Oklahoma, we were 16-15. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was rebuilding. We took over a program that had some NCAA issues, some sanctions, and there was loss of talent and trying to recruit late for me. Mm-hmm. Understanding, I didn't really understand the difference between high major and mid major. Yeah. And at that time, where the VCU program was, it was a very big difference. Mm-hmm. As far as the stature, the recruiting, and the things you deal with in recruiting.
Yep.
The type of kid you're recruiting, the number of people that are involved with the kids that you're recruiting. And so I think I learned there, I think it's a couple things. You got to have people in that foxhole that are really with you, because mm-hmm. inevitably in all these jobs, and I don't care who you are, you can be Coach K, you can be, you know, Roy Williams, you can be Tom Izzo, you can be, there is going to be adversity.
Yeah.
There's going to be tough times. And when you have that, I mean, you got to have people in that foxhole with you. And that's the people that you work with, the people you work for, and things like that. The second thing I think I learned is I probably wasn't ready at that time to truly understand how to run a program. Mm-hmm. I think I understood coaching, but how to run a program. Right before my last year at VCU, I was really close with the president there. Mm-hmm. And we would have breakfast at least usually about twice a month. Mm-hmm. And at one of those breakfasts, he said to me, we want to continue to grow this program, and I need your help with that, to teach me how to run a big-time basketball program. But I can help you to understand all the other things with running the program, how to deal with donors, raising money, mm-hmm. all these things like that. And to be honest with you, at the time when he said it, I was a little bit offended by it because I thought I knew it.
Yeah.
And when I went to Oklahoma, I understood at a higher level what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. And so I think those are probably the two things that I learned the most.
And then after your time ended at Oklahoma, you know, you end up back at Duke, you know, now with Coach K and all that kind of stuff, your relationship's obviously shifting with him now. You go from a recruit to a player and now a coach. How has your relationship kind of shifted with Coach K in that manner?
Well, you know, I think certainly as I grew and became a man and I left Duke, my relationship, you know, with him changed even then. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, you know, I tell people, like, when I was 16, that's when I committed. I was 17 when I committed, and I was 22 when I graduated. 17 to 22, like, I believed in him and all these things like that. After playing for him, I swear by him now.
Yeah.
And so I believed in him when I was younger. I swear by him now. And that relationship has continued to evolve to now. And when I was, you know, 17 to 22 years old, playing for him, recruited by him and playing for him, I never imagined that at 45, and when I went back to Duke, I think I was like 38, I think. I never imagined that 38 to, you know, where I am now, that I'd be friends with the guy that I played for.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very close and very special friendship and relationship. And I learned so much during my 7 years back there working for him and working with him. At a high level, it's almost like it was necessary that I had to do that. Mm-hmm. Certainly it was painful getting fired and going through all of that and the embarrassment and feeling like you let people down and all of these things like that. But the thing I realized is that life goes on, the profession goes on, not many people care. Mm-hmm. So you find out who your real friends are and things like that. I was fortunate that I had a place to go back home, which was Duke. And I had people that genuinely cared about me. It's something, to be honest with you, that I really needed mm-hmm. at that particular time in my life. And for my growth as a coach, going back there and learning from him, learning from Wojo, from Chris, who were there at the time, learning from Kevin White, the athletic director, mm-hmm. learning the mistakes that I made at Oklahoma, learning some of the good things that I did at Oklahoma and at VCU, and learning more about running a program. And look, there's no program in all of college athletics that's at a higher level. There's some that may be at the same level, but there are none that are at a higher level than that program at Duke. And seeing all the things that go into running the program were incredibly necessary. And then Coach gave me a lot of freedom. Mm-hmm. I got a chance to do a lot. One of my big things when he talked about hiring me was, look, I don't want to be just an assistant. I don't want to be just a recruiter.
Yeah.
You know, so many black coaches get labeled as just a recruiter. I don't want to be that. And he gave me a lot of freedom. I got to be involved with USA basketball with the national team. And so to do the World Cup in 2014, to do the Olympics in 2016, I had a lot of responsibility. And I think that really helped prepare me for this journey and this challenge that I'm on right now.
So obviously I wanted to touch on that Olympics part real quick. Obviously at Duke, I mean, you know, at Oklahoma, Blake Griffin, number one overall pick. Duke, I mean, lottery pick after lottery pick. Still, the Olympic team is a completely different level of yeah. talent and stuff. What did you see the difference was between, like, managing a program in college and managing the Olympic team? Like how did you grow from that, and what did you take away from that?
Well, I think for me, I think the thing that I learned the most, you know, I didn't have any – thing with managing it. When I had a specific role, I was a special assistant. I was involved with scouting mm-hmm. and with workouts, coordinating the workouts for the players. And if they didn't have their guy there, their trainer, then I helped do the workouts. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that I probably learned the most and took from that, I don't think people appreciate how good these guys are and what goes into it, mm-hmm. what goes into them being how serious they are about their craft and the amount of time they put into it. You know, people watch them play, you know, during the games, and that's what you see. And you can say they're not going hard. They don't play hard. These guys are that good that they can make it look easy. Mm-hmm. And to seeing how they work, their dedication to it, to see how much they want to know. You couldn't give them enough information in scouting. That's probably one of the things that blew me away. Mm-hmm. You'd be up there talking to them about, let's say, Argentina and, you know, a guy. Because they don't want to look bad. And so they want the information, even though they played against Ginobili. Okay, because Ginobili in the NBA is very different from Ginobili in Argentina.
No doubt.
You know, Patty Mills is very different for the Spurs than he is for Australia. Mm-hmm. And so they want to know this stuff. When you're working them out, in 2014, every day, just about every day, I worked out Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. Those are my two guys. Mm-hmm. Watching them, seeing how hard they go, seeing like no wasted movement, no BS. Mm-hmm. You know, it may not be low, but it's intense. It's all game speed. They're challenging each other. They're challenging themselves, you know, and doing that. Watching Harden, watching Kyrie. In 2016, a lot of times I was with Durant, with Carmelo, with Kyrie, watching them. And then they'd come and, okay, Kate, what you got for me today? You better be on your toes because they don't want to waste time. If you're not, then they're not going to come to you anymore. Mm-hmm. And so just watching that and then watching how to assemble, watching Coach and Coach Boeheim and Tibbs and Monty Williams and Mr. Colangelo, how they assemble all of this talent but mesh it together.
Yeah.
Like one of the most amazing things is that Coach would say, you know, people will say, you know, leave your egos at the door. No, I want you to bring your egos. Like, bring them, and then we'll figure out how to mesh them together. But, you know, KD, I need you to be KD. I don't need you to try to be something else. Kyrie, I need you to be Kyrie. And so that was awesome to see and to be a part of and to experience.
And then, so the Coach K tree, you had Collins, Wojo, yourself, Amaker, Dawkins, Bray, the list goes on. What is it, do you think, about Coach K that his biggest attribute that makes him such a successful coach and bestowing upon these people to move forward, having incredible successful careers as well?
You know, I think his greatest attribute is his ability to understand that you have to adapt. Mm-hmm. Coach has not been one, you know, like how he is right now, or at least I don't know how he is right now, but when I was there for the 7 years, is very different from how he was when I played for him. And it's smart because you have to be different. You know, kids, society is different. Kids are different. You know, in 2015, when we won the national championship, those guys, and we had three guys that ended up being one and done in that, you know, like on that team, they were very different than the guys in 2017. And so understanding how it changes, being smart enough, and not being a guy that's stuck in a box and saying, well, this is the way it has to be. No, I have to adapt. Mm-hmm. I have to adjust. You know, Coach is 70-plus years old right now. How is he able to relate to a 17, 18-year-old? Mm-hmm. The only way you can do that is that you have to adapt and you have to adjust. It doesn't mean that you change the standard, but you have to adjust. And so I think that's something that's huge. And then his ability to communicate. His ability to communicate with his assistants and with his players, I think those are the two big things that we all of us learned and all of us have tried to apply as best as we can in our own way, mm-hmm. you know, in our careers as we've left.
So Pittsburgh had some success under Jamie Dixon, took a huge detour, I guess, previously to you, 0-18 the year before you came in the ACC. What was it about the Pittsburgh program that drew you to it?
You know, there's a couple things. You know, the very first thing is that I knew what it was. You know, when Pitt joined the Big East, you know, when the Big East was formed, you know, they had a lot of success in the 80s. Mm-hmm. It took a little bit of a dip in the 90s. And then right around early 2000s, when Ben Howland got here, it started the trajectory again going up. And Ben Howland was here and had unbelievable success. And then Jamie was here with them and took over and continued that and continued to take it to new heights. Mm-hmm. And so from around 2003 till about 2014, 15, this was one of the better and most consistent programs in the country. Mm-hmm. And as a fan of college basketball, I knew that. I had always heard about the Peterson Event Center where they played. And I always heard about the crowd, the Oakland Zoo. So I knew what it had been. So I was intrigued by that. Honestly, I liked the fact that they were down. Mm-hmm. Because it takes away some of the pressure when you come right in. You know, when I went to Oklahoma, I replaced Kelvin Sampson, who had similar success to Jamie. Mm-hmm. You know, the difference is that Kelvin went to the Final Four, mm-hmm. but Kelvin was a hell of a coach. Mm-hmm. And obviously the values and things that he instilled in that program, and Billy Tubbs before him was a hell of a coach. And so then, you know, when I took over at Oklahoma, Oklahoma had the longest streak of postseason appearances. No one knew that. I didn't know that as a fan of college basketball. And so when I took that over, there was a pressure. Like my first year, we didn't make the postseason. Mm-hmm. So there was a pressure going into it. I like the fact that it was down because it gives me and our staff an opportunity to come in and do it how we want to do it. And I think people have been understanding that it's not going to happen right away. Now, that's also been hard for me mm-hmm. because at both places, VCU and Oklahoma, in year two, we kind of made the switch mm-hmm. where you made the post, you made the tournament. And so you kind of saw the change. We see the change, but it hasn't happened certainly as fast as we wanted to, and maybe not as fast as some of the fans. But, and then when I started looking at it, when they came after me, the other thing that I didn't know, which I do now, is that how good of a school it is. Mm-hmm. It's a top 25 public school. I didn't know any of that stuff, how cool the city is. And so, again, I wasn't looking. When they came after me, I was intrigued by the first part. Mm-hmm. As I started doing some homework myself, I was a little bit more intrigued. And then after we lost at Duke, they came down and they met with us. When I say us, me and my wife, mm-hmm. We felt like that this was the one that would provide the opportunity, you know, for me. And then for me, I never had a dream job as a coach. Once I got into this, you're talking about a guy that didn't grow up wanting to be a coach. Yeah. So I never had a dream job. But once I got into it, my dream was to coach in the ACC. I really wanted to coach in the ACC because I love this conference. I know this conference. I grew up with it. I played in it. I'm a huge fan of it. And this gave me the opportunity to coach in the ACC as well.
And now you're entering year three at Pitt. Year one, you move from 8 wins to 14 wins. You know, year two, you go from 14 wins to 16 wins, still improving, getting better and all that kind of stuff after having to revamp the roster. This year, you return your top two scorers from last year, three of your top five overall, the guys that you brought in. How do you feel about where the roster's at right now and this season moving forward?
Yeah. And I feel really good where we are right now and going forward. Because we finally have, I think, a really good group of core guys returning. And so now we're at a point, you know, in order for us to make the next step, where we have some older guys that have played a lot and have had some success that can now talk to the younger guys about, the incoming guys about, look, here's what you have to do to have success. These same guys that are returning this core group, they've also had some failures. Mm-hmm. They've gone through some crap. And so now the next part of our journey is we have to understand and learn how to win and the discipline that it takes to do that every day. Mm-hmm. We have 6 new guys that will be with us next year, 5 freshmen, and then 1 kid that set out last year that will be eligible to play. Mm-hmm. They're all talented. They're all long and athletic. We now have some size. That's something that we have not had. We now, I think, will have some quality depth. So we have competition in practice. Mm-hmm. We can hold guys more accountable now. And so I like where we are. Obviously, we haven't been able to see them together and not sure when because of what's going on. But I do like where we are. I like where we're going. And we look forward to having a chance, hopefully, to continue to make a jump. You know, I thought this past season we did make a jump. Mm-hmm. We had a chance to make a leap.
Oh, yeah.
But we weren't ready for that yet. And that's what the last 7 games of the regular season showed us. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting at 15-9, and we have a chance to control our destiny. And we weren't disciplined enough, and we didn't understand everything that it takes to win at this level. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we learn from that. And when we're in this position next year, we can take advantage of it.
You mentioned that you signed 5 in this class. You also had the one sitting out, but you brought in previously. But you signed 5 in this class. they're long, athletic, all that stuff. What is it that you look for on the trail when you go out? What are you trying to bring in and infiltrate this program with in the DNA of a player?
Yeah. Well, the first thing you look at is talent. I mean, that's what attracts you to a guy. And it's a talent that you feel can help your program, help maybe it's a specific need, something that you, or whatever, but talent is paramount. And so that's the very first thing. And for us, what we look for is guys that we think can help us win the ACC, mm-hmm. not just win in the ACC, but win. Yep. You know, I think if you can win this league or be at the top of this league, then automatically you have a chance to be in contention to make a run in the NCAA tournament on a national level, because I still believe it's the best league in college basketball. And then as we identify the talent, okay, then the fit. We try to figure out character. We try to figure out, okay, what's this kid about? We try to do our due diligence asking, academically, where is he? Does he take academics seriously? Is that something that's important to him? And then how will he fit in to the guys that we have? You know, how does he fit into the culture that we're trying to build? I want guys that are competitive. I want guys that are naturally competitive, because that's the kind of environment we want to create in practice and drills and workouts and conditioning when we're lifting weights. We try to create it in the classroom and study hall and tutors, all of these things. And so is it a guy that is disciplined, that is self-motivated, and that wants to compete? Mm-hmm. Is he a guy that wants to be a part of something? You know, that wants to win, that doesn't just say I want to win, but is willing to sacrifice. So when we go watch, we try to watch everything, body language, how they interact with teammates, how they interact, you know, with their coaches. One of my favorite things is to watch a kid in the summer, to watch him with his AAU team, because you can see him maybe in the morning, he's really good. Mm-hmm. How does he respond after being really good? You know, does he come back, you know, in that evening session, is he full of himself or is he hungry for more? Mm-hmm. It's also great when you see a kid not play well. How does he respond? You know, does he come back more determined? Is he more focused? And so you try to look at all of those things and to see how he fits into the culture that you're trying to build.
Yeah, you got Femi Odekele, William Jeffries, John Hewley, Noah Collison, and Max Amundsen. Talk a little bit about the incoming class and what you're expecting from them.
Yeah, well, you know, the very first thing is that they're all talented. Mm-hmm. Every one of them. And we have had a chance to build a relationship and to cultivate a relationship with them over a period of time. That's something that's really important to kind of go in the order in which they, you know, committed. Noah Collier is a kid that, you know, we identified when we first got here. We really loved his upside. You know, he's long, he's grown, he's about 6'8" and a half now. He's really athletic. We feel like he can be a versatile kid for us. You know, defend multiple positions, do multiple things offensively, and we feel like he has a big upside. Mm-hmm. John Hughley was the next guy, and, you know, he's big. You know, he looks like some of those guys that Pitt had when they were really good. He's big, he's wide, you know, he's tough. You know, he's really, really skilled, and that's something I don't think a lot of people saw when they saw him in summer ball. But he can shoot it. He can really pass the basketball. He rebounds, which is something that we sorely need. And he's a really, really talented kid that we also think that has big upside. Mm-hmm. Max is a kid that's big. He's long. He's athletic. He's strong already. He can really run. He rebounds already with who, you know, what he did in high school. He ball screens. He rim runs. He can finish around the rim. And he can defend the basket. Mm-hmm. We also think he has upside. You know, Femi was the next kid, and he's a guy that kind of blew up a little bit later, went to Springfield this year and really started to blow up, played with the ball in his hands a lot. You know, he's 6'5", with a 6'11 wingspan, can defend multiple positions, can do multiple things offensively. He has a toughness. He has a competitiveness, mm-hmm. and he's really, really wants to win. And then Will is a kid that graduated early. Has continued to get better, still very young, 16 years old. Because he's local, we got a chance to see him a lot. Mm-hmm. And so obviously followed him in the summer with summer ball and watched his growth. And he's continued to get better offensively, you know, with his movements, with his ball handling. He's about 6'7", We think he has a chance to continue to grow. He can shoot it. He can handle it. We think he can defend multiple positions. So the one thing you see a trend are guys that are versatile, long, athletic, and it gives us a chance, we think, to finally look like an ACC team, something that we have not in our first 2 years.
And the fact that all these guys are high school kids, was that done by design?
Well, yes. I mean, again, you know, what was done was that we had a chance to develop relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, John, Noah, Max, and Will, we started recruiting them shortly after I got the job, mm-hmm. when we had a chance to go out and start seeing people. Femi was the one that we got in on a little bit later as he started to blow up. One of my assistants had kind of tracked them and kept in touch. But we really, once he, you know, kind of had the years, the start to the year that he had this year, and I had a chance to see him. And so it wasn't necessarily, look, we'll recruit JUCO, we'll recruit transfer, you know, anything like that. We want to get the best players. But these are guys that we had a chance to cultivate this relationship with. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, because of that, they saw something here that they believed in. You know, they wanted to be a part of building something. You know, they also know what this program has been, and so we know what it can be. Yeah. And, you know, we really want to get out, and they really wanted to be a part of this. They believed in it. They believe in us. They believe in what they can do to contribute. One of the most important things, and we told each one of them, we don't need any of them to come in and be the savior. Mm-hmm. We need them to come in and be them and to be a part of it, but to work their butts off and to be all about winning. And if you do that, man, and I saw this in 2015 when I was a part of that team at Duke and we won the championship, and we had a lot of talent on that team, but everyone was about one goal. And because everyone was about that, each of them shined.
Yeah.
And when you win, that's what happens. Every guy shines. And all of these guys have talent, even our returning guys, but we have to be about the right things.
Walking into a Pittsburgh practice, even if you have no knowledge of the program or whatever, what are one or two things you can guarantee somebody will see or feel exuding from the Pittsburgh basketball program?
I think you'll see energy, and I think you'll see competitiveness, especially if you come to a practice. You'll see a lot of energy, and you'll see a lot of competition. You could see some fights, too, to be honest with you.
That's good.
Because competition, no, it's really good. The competition gets intense, and guys get after it. But you're also going to see a lot of love. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's vital to have competition, but I think competition without love is very dangerous. And so you'll see all of those things. And I think you'll see guys pushing each other to really get better and to be at their best. And to me, that's what the really good programs, not the good teams, that's what the really good programs do. And that's what this program was. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had a chance to talk to some of these former guys. I have one on my staff that was a really good player on some of those very good teams. And when you talk to these guys, they talk about the practices and how competitive they were and things like that. I saw it at Duke. Mm-hmm. You know, that 2015 team, when we won it all, there were several fights, man, in practice. And it was awesome to see.
No question.
Because guys got after it. I mean, two of the guys that got into it all the time were Justice Winslow and Grayson Allen. And they're best friends, roommates. When they got on that court, man, like, they went after it. And that's what you want. That's what the really good programs have. And I'm excited because we're trending in that way. We've seen the growth and the energy and all of those things. But I think we're going to continue to see it as a high, you know, at a higher level as we continue to move forward.
Oh, absolutely. I have no doubt. Shifting a little bit toward an overall NCAA type thing. Obviously, they're looking at this name, image, likeness rule to pass. They're looking at the one-time transfer rule to pass and stuff. Where do you stand on those type of things, and what are your thoughts on those two?
Yeah, you know, it's a very interesting time, mm-hmm. in college basketball specifically right now. Certainly all of college athletics, but definitely in college basketball. Our sport is so different, and it's so unique. Mm-hmm. And I wish that it would be treated in that manner. I think one of the biggest mistakes that's happened over all of these years is that the NCAA has tried to put everything in one box. Mm-hmm. And our sport is very different and unique. Our sport is the only one where, especially now, where you can't go directly from college, mm-hmm. to the pros. You can do it in baseball, tennis, soccer, all these other things. But in our sport, you can. But when you do come to college, you can leave after 1 year. In football, you have to stay. Baseball, you have to stay an X amount of years. And so there's a different type of challenge when we recruit that other sports don't have to face. And so it should be treated differently. You know, to be honest, I am not a fan of the one-time transfer rule. I'm just not. I do think that a young man should be able to transfer if there's a coaching change without penalty. I think if a coach is fired, if a coach leaves to go take another job, or if a coach retires, then I do think that he should have the option. I'm speaking for me, men's basketball.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm not saying she right now. but I do think a young man should have an opportunity if any of those things happen. You know, I do understand that, but I don't think, like, if you look at it, you know, the transfer numbers have continued to go up every year. You know, it was at about 350 years ago, and then, you know, a year. And then they put in the transfer portal that makes it easier. And that number has escalated to 800 plus, 900 plus, 1,000 plus. And I think when you, if they do this, and I think it will happen, I think you'll see that number continue to trend at an even higher level. You know, when I was in college, look, I think if a coach is mistreating the kid and is being abusive in any way, then I absolutely don't, I think that kid should leave, you know, without penalty and things like that. But I do think there's something about fighting it out, you know, and things like that. Also understand the other part. Like, you know, I hear people say, well, a coach can leave and there's no penalty. That's not exactly true. You know, when I left VCU to go to Oklahoma, there's a thing in my contract that I had a buyout. I had to pay that. Like, I had to write those checks. I didn't come because I broke the contract. And so, you know, like, there's penalties there. And so, again, I'm not a fan of that one. The name, image, and likeness, I don't know enough about it yet. I don't know where it is, but I do think at some level, a young man should be able to profit off of his name. I do understand that. Now, I'm not going to sit up here and profess right now to understand what all that means and everything that it entails, but I do think that there's some things that a young man should be able to do. I don't know everything, so I can't say I agree with everything, but I do think there's some things that these young people should be able to profit off of. Like when I was a player, you know, I thought it was kind of odd or screwed up, to be honest, that by the time I was a sophomore, you know, and a junior in subsequent years, I could go into the bookstore and there's my jersey. But if I wanted it, like the equipment guy couldn't give it to me. You know, I had to pay for it. If I wanted to get it, you know, for one of my little cousins or even my younger brother at the time, I thought it was something that was a little bit messed up about that. And so, again, I think there's some things about it that are really good that I've learned a little bit, but I'm not knowledgeable enough to know everything yet.
Yeah, no doubt. I think there's a lot to be – it's a step in the right direction. But I think there's a lot of questions that need to be answered in implementation before it gets going.
Absolutely. And, you know, look, I'll say this. I do think I'm not one of these people that believes everything the NCAA has done has been great or good. And I know they screw up, and just like we screw up as coaches and administrators and things like that. But I do think they've made some steps. I mean, in 2014, Shabazz Napier gets up at the Final Four and talks about Hungary doesn't have money and things like that. And they have gone a long way of doing things, the NCAA, to allow these kids to make money and to get things and things like that. So they've done some things. And I think the fact that they have an open mind to this now is a step in the right direction. It's not going to change immediately where it's going to be right for everyone overnight, right? It's something that everyone's going to have to continue and have an open mind and adapt to. But it is a step in the right direction.
I agree. Well, I guess that I probably took too much of your time here. I really appreciate you coming and all that. It was a great conversation. Do you have anything that you want to leave the Jeff Capel fans, fans of Pittsburgh, anything you want to leave them with?
You know, just really right now, you know, we're in a obviously a very weird and strange time, a time that none of us have ever experienced. And, you know, for me, I think it's really, really important to listen to the experts, as difficult as that may be, mm-hmm. as frustrating as that may be, because this is not normal what we're going through. But we want to get back to what we're used to. Mm-hmm. And so right now, the doctors, the scientists, the experts, those are the people that are the coaches, the GMs, presidents, all of those things. And we need to listen to them.
Yeah.
And we need to be good soldiers, good players, you know, whatever, and follow instructions. And if we do that, then I think we'll get back. And we have to be there for each other. We have to continue to help each other. And one of the best ways to do that right now is to be great listeners.
Absolutely. Jeff, I want to thank you so much for joining us. I want to thank you so much for coming and sharing your story and your expertise and all that kind of stuff. It was a great conversation.
Well, I appreciate you having me, man.
Absolutely. Guys, thank you very much for tuning in. For Jeff Capel and the Absolute Basketball Experience, I'm Jamie Shaw. See you next time.